Welcome to the Hoopsite Podcast. My name is Alex Kennedy. Today I'm joined by Spencer Breaker, who's an agent for NBA coaches and executives. He worked at Kauffman Sports Management Group, which was recently acquired by CAA Sports. As part of the move, Spencer was promoted to CAA's head of the basketball coaches and executives division. Spencer represents people like Mike Malone, Monty Williams, Steve Clifford, and many others, and I'm excited to pick his brain.
So starting off, I just wanted to talk about your background and how you kind of got to this point. Can you kind of break down how you got started in the business and when you first realized that this is the path that you wanted to go down, representing executives and coaches?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, you never really realize it. I think someone recently at I was at a friend's house and he came over. I hadn't seen him since high school. He said in the fourth grade that I wanted to be a sports agent. I honestly don't remember that, but like many sports agents that you see these days, whether it's from Jerry Maguire or from Arliss, I was a big fan of Arliss, the show. I've always wanted to work in sports. There was no doubt. I played a lot of sports in high school, not good enough to play at a higher level, but that to me there was no other option. I don't know if I would be able to do anything and do anything well if it wasn't sports. But then like most stories, I was fortunate enough to get in touch with someone who was influential, like Steve Kauffman. And I actually had a job that I really enjoyed at the time. I was working for AEG, which is an entertainment company, and I was managing people, and I was loving it out of college. And I'd met Steve, and we went to dinner. I wasn't really looking for a job at all. And he was representing, he just started representing coaches and executives. He'd been a longtime player agent forever, representing guys like, you know, Doc Rivers, Ben Wallace, a bunch of guys. And he was looking for someone to file and answer the phone. And he offered me half of the salary I was currently making to work with him. And I remember going to his office. He worked at a home here in LA. And I saw his board. He had a board of all the coaches, the prospects he was going after, all the names. And that actually got me really excited to be a part of that. And I knew at that time I was 23, I think, and I didn't really need money. I wasn't looking for it, and I knew that was the opportunity to take a chance. And I'm very, very fortunate that he took a chance on me too. And from there, kind of just got in, and I'm very thankful for it. And we just kind of shot up and got clients and learned a lot and had a nice run.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think that's around the time that you and I first kind of connected. We talked a little bit when you were working with Steve. Over the years that you kind of worked with Steve, what were some of the biggest things that he taught you, or, you know, things that you learned from just that experience?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to put into words, to be honest, what he's meant to me both personally and professionally, giving me a chance, and the clients the same way. I mean, they were able to kind of take me under and put a lot of trust and refer me other clients, and that was really helpful. But particularly from Steve, what I noticed first was that, you know, when you think of sports agents, sometimes whether it's TV shows or movies, you think about, you know, boundaries. Steve really taught me that with integrity, you can still be successful in the business. And that's what stood out to me. Every time I have been in this talking to people around the league about Steve, they all talk about his integrity or him as a person. And I think oftentimes a misconception in the business is that, you know, you got to be a little shady to get things done. But Steve has been very, very successful and very well respected based on that integrity. And that was the first thing that stood out to me, was that you can be successful with it. And then the other thing I was thinking about it that really taught me was just how to value these clients as people. I mean, to become a coach or an executive or a player, if you're representing players, or if you're in TV or film, I mean, to get to that level that these guys are at, to be an NBA head coach, I mean, if you think about the odds, the chances, or how few seats there are in that position, I mean, these are really, really special people. The Monty Williams of the world, the Steve Cliffords, and the Michael Malones, all these guys that just really, really special minds, people, fathers, husbands, you know, all that. To get to that level, you really have to, we're not selling widgets here. I mean, these are people, and you got to value them, you know, as people and special ones at that. And that, those are like the main two things. I could go on and it could be a whole nother podcast just about what Steve has taught me, but those are the two things that stood out to me.
Yeah, that's great. You know, and I think this world is so interesting to me because I don't really know a whole lot about it. You know, I think we hear a lot about the agent world with players, and we've tried at Hoopsite to write different articles and do different podcasts where we kind of give fans and readers a behind the scenes look at what it's like to be a player agent. But
yeah, I'm a big fan of those articles, so keep going.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that. What are the biggest differences between representing, you know, front office executives and coaches and representing players?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't ever represented players. Obviously, I've been around the industry. Steve has represented players forever, so I can't really get into like the day-to-day what it would be like just because I haven't done it.
Sure.
You know, from a logistical side, we're not bound by any sort of rules like a CBA or anything like that. So that stands out to me is your ability to be creative a lot in the negotiations, contractually, just the lack of rules, but in a good way. I mean, it's not just kind of wild, wild west with that, what I'm saying by that. But I think obviously the age difference is big. That has changed, but it's also, again, I can't speak to other agents' relationships with their players, but it's a very much like a peer-to-peer relationship. These coaches are older. You end up kind of growing close to them as family men. And I really enjoy that aspect. And I can see from a difference, obviously, just from an age gap. I mean, you're able to kind of have a business-like relationship with them that grows. I also, you know, quite frankly, obviously, they're lower paid. And they deserve more money. Again, for another podcast, we can get into that, but they're lower paid, and marketing endorsements, speaking engagements are all different as compared to representing a player, where they have different marketability. There's different companies that look for them. There's different types of speaking engagements that they'd be looking for. But overall, yeah, I mean, representing players, it seems these days that there's max players, there's mid-level, and all the different aspects. With a coach, it's fair game, where they should be the highest paid lead assistant coach, the highest head coach, length of deal, options, triggers. You can make up clauses and throw them in there. It's fun from that aspect.
Wow, I didn't think about that aspect of it. Making up the clauses and just kind of not having to be bound by the CBA is so interesting. So when you're entering these negotiations, are you allowed to just get creative? And do you just say, you know, we're going to ask for all these things and see what they give us? Or is there some kind of standard that you want to stick to just so that you don't upset people? How does it kind of work when you're in these negotiations? Yeah. Because there's no standard or no, you know, rules really in place? Or does it kind of vary from situation to situation?
Yeah, I mean, just like in any negotiation, you can ask for anything and see what happens. So
true.
I think there's no like that. But the standards would be like in any business, there's business ethics. I mean, you want to make sure that you have a good relationship with whomever you're dealing with, the owner, the president, the GM, an assistant GM, or the coach themselves. So there are rules from the just basic business code. But I mean, overall, yeah, you can. It's really fun. You can be creative and use bonuses. That if you're top five in defensive efficiency, or top 10 in this, top seven, or you can get a trigger if you make the playoffs. It's over. It's actually really fun when you get to it. Each team has a different version of contracts that they like to give for as employment agreements with coaches or executives. But overall, a lot of the similar clauses are all in there.
Interesting. It sounds like Kawhi Leonard's uncle needed to negotiate Kawhi an executive or coaching deal based on the stuff he was asking for, but that's a different story. Yep. We actually have an article coming up on Hoops Hype about different incentives that are in deals, and you know how a lot of the incentives for players now are based on advanced stats. And you mentioned defensive rating. I know some of them are about true shooting percentage, and sometimes there's even formulas like, you know, your rebounds per 36 minutes minus X, Y, Z, or whatever. I mean, it's getting to the point where there's a lot of analytics in these incentives. Mm-hmm. Does that exist also in the coaching style? You mentioned defensive rating as an example. You know, can you kind of speak to some of the incentives that exist when you're negotiating these contracts? Or I know, like you said, you can really ask for anything, but what are some that are more common than others?
Yeah, a lot of it obviously is based on team success.
Sure.
You're not really associated with a player or specific players. Most of it is based on team success, whether it's playoffs or I wouldn't call them basic stats, but overall stats like defensive rating or offensive rating. I remember vividly Jeff Bauer was one of the first to do that, and he was the GM of the New Orleans Hornets at the time, and he was one of the first to be willing to get creative. So it's again, sorry to keep going back to it, like any sort of business negotiation. I mean, it depends on each party if they're willing to get creative, if they see the upside to find a way in the middle that both parties can win. But as far as like how advanced it gets, because we're talking about overall team success, I think it depends on what the team is looking for out of the coach, whether they really want to improve defensively, where they really want to improve offensively. But I would say traditionally it's more if we make the playoffs, wins and losses, or you know, finishing somewhere, both from an efficiency standpoint.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, I was thinking that because these guys are typically older and more mature when you're kind of representing them, that, you know, maybe a little bit less high maintenance. Because with players, you know, when I did that article about agents sharing their crazy stories and they talked about being in strip clubs trying to help a guy, or, you know, just tons of crazy stories about basically trying to help their players get out of these insane situations. I'd imagine that doesn't happen as often in your line of work. Would you agree that maybe the clients that you're working with are a little bit less high maintenance or easier to deal with at times?
Yeah, I mean, again, I hate to take the answer away from you, but I haven't represented any other types. So
true, yeah.
I wouldn't really know, but there's clients are all different. You know, they're different personalities. Some, whether it's high maintenance or low maintenance, you know, we've really been fortunate enough to be afforded the opportunity that we can be a little bit picky with the types of clients we represent, and we're really proud of them. But I can't say as far as, you know, a player, if they're more high maintenance or less. I think whether they're 20, whether they're 50, whatever their background is, some are going to be low maintenance and some are going to be high maintenance based on the numbers. You know, when you represent 50, 60 guys, they all come in different forms. So, but either way, I think you, and this is something that Steve also really taught me, is you adapt to the situation. So you have to be able to adapt to the different personalities of them to make sure that, you know, you're able to connect with them and however they feel is best for them and their family.
For sure. What are some of the things that you look for in up and coming coaches and executives? You know, whenever we're talking about agents on the player side, obviously they're looking at prospects that are coming out through college and all that. When you're looking for top clients that are, you know, up and coming in the coaching world or in the front office world, you know, how do you kind of identify their talent or their potential?
Yeah, that's a good question, Alex. I mean, there really isn't an exact science to it, to be honest. I look both, how I'd put it, internally and externally. You know, like externally, you look at their background, like their profile, you know, who they've worked for, who they've played with, who they worked with, you know, the types of influences they've had, maybe their roles and responsibilities with a particular team or the players maybe they've worked with. You know, and then internally, you talk to people around the league, you have a trusted circle and, you know, referral base where you can speak to people that have either worked with them or closely to them to really kind of see how they are day to day, what kind of upside they have, how they are to work with. Because from my perspective, I'm not there every single day working with them in the video room or on the court. So I really trust, you know, a lot of the people around the league to kind of give me the referral. And then the bottom line to me too, just from being around a lot of coaches and executives, is, you know, your gut feel, just like at anything. You sit across them having coffee or having breakfast and you just kind of get a feel from being around, again, fortunately enough, like Steve Clifford and Monty Taylor, all these guys, that you can kind of just get a gut and say, hey, this guy's going to be really good, or I really like this guy, or he's got great expectations, or his approach is really good. And that obviously can tip the scales one way or the other too, just being face to face with someone.
For sure. One thing that I hear from different executives or coaches, especially ones that maybe aren't in a top position, they're thinking, how can I get my name out there? How can I, you know, climb the ranks? I want to do more and get noticed. And I think it's very hard for them sometimes because they don't get the credit that they feel they deserve sometimes, or they don't know what to do to take that next step in their career because it's hard to quantify their success and they don't want to put their name out there and, you know, take credit for a bunch of stuff because that can be a bad look.
You're right. And to me, it's a little bit of a red flag if they are kind of putting their name out there too much. And that's just my personal approach. Everyone's different. But I look at, you know, a guy like Steven Silas or something. I mean, it's my job to promote that he's coached two rookies of the year in their rookie season, like LeBron and Luka, or he's coached with Steph Curry and Kemba, you know, that he's the son of a coach or a Brown grad. Like these are the things that I want to brag about. And if they put their head down and work, guys like him and Adrian Griffin and Darvin Ham, they're going to get their opportunities and they know that and they're good people like that. But I like to be the one personally to brag about them. I feel that's my job. I learned early in this that, you know, a way to get from a coaching standpoint to get, let's say, kicked out of the league is usually if you gossip too much or if you don't work. And those are like the two main ways. And that's my opinion.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And if you're taking credit for every little thing that you do and your name's out there a lot, then not only I think is it a red flag for people like yourself, but the people that you work with in your organization start to resent you and think that you're kind of a me first guy. So they're in a tough spot.
Probably try to, you know, show to your team too, is just that it is about the team, that whether you're a ball handler or a shooter, you know, that we all have our different roles. And the same would go with any coaching staff. Same would go probably with you at HoopsHype and your producer and what your role is. And same with me here at CAA. I mean, so I think if you're talking to a guy and he's talking about him, the gut feel is that the leadership might not be there.
Right. That's a good point. How do you recruit new clients? Because, again, I don't know this world that well. So what's that process like?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is word of mouth. It's a smaller circle than you think. So a lot of it comes from other clients that say, hey, I've had a lot of success with this person. I really like this person. You should talk to them. I would say the majority of that comes from just word of mouth from your circle. I learned quickly that the MBA coaching executive world isn't as big as one may think. So you really have to approach it, you know, understanding that it's going to get around how you are day to day and how you deal with other teams and your client maintenance or management with each individual. So I'd say the vast majority of it comes from word of mouth from other agents, other player agents that might feel good about it, the actual coaches, the executives, media members. There's no one way, but it's, I would say, a little bit more rare than you picking up the phone and cold calling guys. At least that's been my experience, but everyone's different on their approach. But I think I've been very thankful and I've seen a lot of success from the word of mouth approach because you get guys of similar ilk that, you know, are fit that sort of mold of that client base that you're looking for. So that approach has been, has worked very well for me. Getting vetting the types of clients that you want to represent, that you want to feel good about pitching around the league.
Right. Is it common for executives and coaches to switch agents or agencies? And is there poaching like there is in the player agent world?
Yeah, I mean, it's competitive. I would say it's not knowing the agent world, but just the player agent world, but reading stories. I don't know if it's as prevalent, but it is competitive. I mean, it's like any business. But Steve Kaufman, again, to go back, taught me this, just like many businesses, it creates paranoia. You know, all this stuff does. So when you're working in this, you have to approach every single day like someone's trying to take your client. And how often it does, it depends on the time of year. But you have to approach in that same sort of way. And I can't say compared to the player agents, but it does happen. But just like the coaches are to the players, it's competition. So this is business and we understand, but you have to have the right approach going into it each day, I think.
We recently did an interview with someone that runs one of the search firms that, you know, helps NBA teams or NCAA teams find a new head coach or a new executive, and they, you know, go through the whole process and kind of facilitate that whole process. And one thing I found interesting was we talked about how sometimes coaches are scared to pick up the phone and show interest in other teams because they're worried, oh, this will leak, or, you know, this team could tell my current employer that about my interest, and then all of a sudden, even if I don't end up getting this job, I'm screwing over the current employer or alienating the, you know, ruining the current job that I have. How much is it, and I'm sure that's an important part of your job too, kind of having those conversations so that your client isn't kind of getting screwed over in any way, or there's no leaks. And because not only can that upset the higher ups, like a GM, if a coach is out there looking at other things than the owner, the GM, but also the locker room can be lost if they think you have one foot out and you're looking at different opportunities. So is that kind of a big part of your job, where you're constantly monitoring the marketplace so that those conversations don't have to happen and your client isn't kind of getting screwed over?
No, it's a great point, Alex. I mean, I think contractually too, you can't be looking for another job too. You have to devote all your time to the specific team. So it's not a good look whether or not it's contractual, but you can't do that while you're employed by a specific team. So it goes back to your earlier point, which was such a good one, about kind of putting your own name out there. I mean, it's just, it doesn't work in a variety of ways, and it's including contractually.
Right. That makes sense too. Yeah. So I want to talk about your move to CAA. So CAA Sports, they acquired Kauffman Sports Management Group, and you are now CAA Sports head of basketball coaches and executives division. Can you kind of talk about what that move entails and how excited you are to now be part of CAA Sports?
Yeah. I mean, I'm extremely excited. It's all happening pretty quick. And, you know, we never had really kind of, there's not like a marketplace where you put a company up for sale. So it never really occurred to us that this would be possible. But the people at CAA, particularly Howie Neuchow and Jimmy Sexton, they've been so good in the process. They've made sure that everyone is comfortable in the approach. The clients were really excited. But for me, it's been about the people here. The sports division and that Howie and Vino run, it's unmatched, to be honest. And then Jimmy, from a football but a coach's perspective, if any of your listeners look up Jimmy Sexton, what he's done as an agent, I mean, he's the cream of the crop when it comes to it. So for me, I'm very fortunate personally to be able to learn from him and work with him. The other sports, especially basketball heads, Austin Brown and Stephen Heumann and Aaron Mintz, I mean, I'm personally very excited about it, but what's more important is it's going to be great for the clients. I mean, the resources that CAA has and has had for so many years, it gives these clients an opportunity to work with broadcasting agents and broadcasting department, endorsement, marketing, you know, from community service aspect, from speaking engagements. They have so many high-level people and departments that are already in motion and elite-level stuff, that it's really going to help the clients, and that's probably most important. And like I told you personally, just being around these people, I'm fortunate. So it's going to be a long, big run. We're going to do a lot of things, obviously, in the NBA. We're now representing 9 NBA head coaches, but from a college basketball perspective too, I expect for us to be, you know, a dominant force in that as well. So I don't know what the future holds with it, but I know it's going to be at a high level, and I'm thankful for that.
Yeah, and I'm so happy for you. You know, I know you've worked really hard for this, and I mean, CAA Sports is so huge, and I think if you talk to a lot of agents, they would love to end up there and be part of CAA. So to have a huge position over there, congratulations to you, and I know you've earned this. So it was really exciting when I saw that news come out. What was it like to be the subject of a Woj bomb, by the way?
That's the first time. It was interesting. I was here at CAA, and he finds out everything, obviously, and how he does, it's still beyond me. But I was in HR's office when that happened, and my phone, I felt so bad because it's such, again, such nice people, and my phone was going crazy, hundreds and hundreds of calls, and I was in the middle of getting all set up here, and I just felt so bad for the situation. But I had never seen the effects of that bomb. And it's probably not nearly what it would be like for a trade or anything. I avoided reading the comments. I think some of my friends actually did, and they laughed about it. But I think the first thing I learned from anybody was just don't read the comment section. So that was my first piece of advice in any Woj bomb.
Definitely. Yeah, it seems like it's to the point now that it seems like if he breaks anything other than a trade or a big signing, people are like, we want to hear a trade. They just go nuts over that. But I thought it was so cool. I was like, oh my gosh,
Justifiably
Spencer.
so, to be honest. Justifiably so. I mean, like the news, I'm thankful that he did it. I'm thankful that we were able to kind of get the news out there. But I don't blame any of the fans. Just like your listeners, you've had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Earl Monroe and Spencer Dinwiddie, I think, and Miles Turner. I mean, so this is all new to me. I'm thankful for it, but I don't blame the fans for saying, who is that or who cares, to be honest.
Well, you have such an interesting story, though, so that's why I did want to have you on to pick your brain and kind of talk about your ascent here. And you know, that's one thing that I always find interesting when I do these different long forms, or whether it's, you know, behind the scenes long form or behind the scenes type podcast. I learn so much about the job and, you know, what that world is like, what different processes are like. So, and I think at Hoopsite, I think we have a lot of listeners or readers that want to work in sports someday. So they may not even know this is a path they can go down or anything like that. And then when they hear about it, they're intrigued and think, oh, that's so cool. Kind of like you were saying about yourself, you know, early on, you didn't have this path in mind, but then you kind of figured it out, learned about it, and thought, okay, that's for me, and then got great at it. So I think it's always interesting whenever we can kind of open their eyes to different things. And, you know, a lot of times our fans are really diehard NBA fans, or our readers, our listeners are diehard NBA
Number
fans.
one thing that I look at every single morning is the first thing I told all my assistants and interns. This is what you check every single morning as soon as you get in the office. So it's for people within the NBA, it's for agents. You guys do a great job.
Well, thank you so much. I've been doing this. I've been reading it long before I worked here. I was the same way. I was checking it, refreshing it all day long. So I do want to ask this too. What are some misconceptions about your job or your world that, or things that maybe fans don't realize about either executives or coaches in general, or the process, you know, representing those people? Is there anything that comes to mind?
Yeah, I think like one of the first misconceptions I would think about is that it isn't just about like the contract negotiation. And I think often people think of the movies or TV where you're pounding your fist on the table and you're trading millions of dollars back and forth and incentives. I mean, that obviously is an incredibly important part of it, but it is just a part of it. I mean, I think of just like the story of Taylor Jenkins, Memphis Grizzlies head coach, who I believe should be one of the main candidates for coach of the year, to give him that blown. It's just, you know, the negotiation, if we really look back and step back at it, maybe lasted 2 or 3 weeks, but it was really kind of him, and I give him a lot of credit, learning the business when he was with the Spurs and becoming a G League head coach, and then going to the Atlanta Hawks and sitting behind the bench for Bud. He was doing media training for it. He was going on different podcasts to learn his skills like that. Throughout the whole time, too, he was prepping his interview packet, you know, like a coaching book that you'd bring to an interview, and how he wants to approach any sort of interview and how he'd build a staff. And then he would go on Basketball Without Borders, and Kim Bahouni in the NBA does a great job with that. And he's able to meet people and get out there and run a clinic. And that has all built, you know, my relationship with him and being able, fortunately, to be a part of that, to that culmination of that negotiation and becoming the head coach of the Memphis Grizzlies. But it's really so much more from a client management standpoint to kind of prep him for that. I mean, if you think about it, Taylor interviewed his first time with the great guys there, Jason Wexler and Zach Kleiman with the Memphis Grizzlies during an Eastern Conference Finals. And so there's a lot of preparation that goes into that, so he's able to, and I thankfully for John Horst and Bud giving him the opportunity to do that during the finals. But there's so much that goes in, so he's prepared for that moment, because you might only get one shot. And it really isn't like, okay, here it is. I want this amount of money. You want that. There we go. And that's the agent's job. That to me would be the biggest misconception. And it's also the other thing I think about is just, yeah, these aren't widgets here. We're not selling desks or pens or anything like that. Yeah, these are people. And it's really good when guys like Taylor get their opportunity, and some people lose their jobs, and it's really difficult, and families have to move and change schools and sell the houses. So there's a lot that comes with it, and I'm just fortunate enough to be a part of their life with it. But it's much more than just the typical client negotiation that you see.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm glad you kind of provided that insight there.
Yeah.
So I know, like I said, we do have people that listen to this podcast that want to work in sports someday. So I want to ask, what advice would you give someone that wants to become a front office executive? And then also, what advice would you give someone that wants to become an agent someday?
Yeah, I feel terrible because probably my interns, if they ever listen to this, they're going to say he said that 100 times. So forgive me. But I think the biggest thing from my perspective is just any experience helps, just to get involved. I was the same way, just kind of getting out of college or starting in the workforce. And you're like, hey, it really matters what the name of the company is on my business card or what my position is. I think if you just get in sports, in general, if you're working in that, whether it's from a team or agent side, the experience just helps right away. Get your foot in the door, get the experience, make the connections around it. At a place like CAA, you might be working in basketball, but let's say maybe you realize representing a basketball broadcaster is important or helping them from a community service standpoint. Once you get in, the relationships and the departments and the experience you have, I think, is so important. I mean, for me, all the stories are different. I can only talk to mine, but yeah, I worked in a warehouse for AEG folding t-shirts, and I really did it because of the opportunity to work in sports. And we were folding Lakers t-shirts for LakersStore.com, and that was just exciting to me. I was a big Lakers fan growing up, and if the t-shirt had a Lakers brand or any sort of sports on it, I was willing to do it. And it afforded me the opportunity to make some connections too in the business. So I'd say, and I was the same way. When you first start, you say, okay, this is going to be my job for life. Oh my God, my first job. I'm done. I mean, this is the path I'm taking. I guess it's over. When really, it's just kind of get any sort of experience and then move on from there. And that's my particular take on it.
Yeah, I love that. Did you have a moment where you were going from being this big Laker fan, a big NBA fan, to kind of like your welcome to the NBA moment where you're thinking, wow, look where I am now? I mean, I know sometimes whenever our careers are ascending and stuff, a lot of people don't take the time to slow down and appreciate those moments. But have there been any moments like that that hit you and you're thinking, oh, wow, like look where I am now from folding t-shirts, X number of years ago?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it happens a lot every year. I'm like, wow, I can't believe this. Even just the other night, I was sitting on the floor pregame. You're schmoozing pregame as an agent, and I thought about it to myself, and I was like, I can't believe this. But the one moment that stands out, this probably was 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. I was sitting in Larry Bird's office negotiating with him. My phone was ringing, and it was Patrick Ewing at the time, and I just kind of sat back. I remember walking out of there. And it's again like the movies, everything is blurry, and you're like, where am I? What is on there? These are, the greatest to ever do it, both, first ballot Hall of Famers, top 50 greatest players, and they just kind of collided at the same time. Now, obviously, there were business aspects to it, but that moment particularly really stands out. But every time I'm sitting there with any of the clients and you realize how good of people they are, Steve had always told me this, but personally, just the relationships you build with these people, that's by far the best part. You go to their homes, you meet their families, you realize like how smart they are, the leaders. I mean, all these relationships that you build, I hate to get corny on you, but it's so fortunate to be able to be around these people. And that's my job. I mean, basically watch basketball and talk on the phone for a living. It's incredible. It's incredible.
Yeah, it doesn't get much better than that. Oh, last
Yeah.
thing for you. What's your 10-year plan? Do you have any goals in mind that you would like to? I feel like I'm. Yeah, I guess like long term, what are some things that you'd want to do? I feel like you're dating my daughter and I'm like questioning you, interrogating you here, but I'm just curious. Do you have a 10-year plan or anything that you, the goals you want to accomplish?
Really just to learn. I don't want to kind of go cliche on it, but really the way that I've always approached it is just each day, just like a coach, and a lot of the stuff I take is from the clients just in life to continuously improve every single day. And then I don't know what it would be for 10 years, but I know if I do that and I learn from the Jimmy Sexton here and Howie and the whole basketball group, I'll be in a good position. But I don't know where that's going to be. I just want to be healthy, and I just want all my friends and family and loved ones and the people I work with to be healthy after 10 years, and that'll be more than perfect for me.
For sure. Well, Spencer, like I said, I'm really happy for you. I think you deserve
thanks.
This. You work incredibly hard and you put in so many, years grinding away. So when I saw this news, I was so happy and I'm glad you were able to join me to kind of break this down. So thank you so much for your time, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you reaching out and us getting together on this. It'll be cool. And I hope your listeners get something from it. And again, go back to the Woj Bombs. Just please be nice in the comment section so my friends.
I love it. Yes, be nice, everyone. Don't be mean. And if you guys want to listen to more episodes of the Hoopsite Podcast, check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere your favorite podcasts are found. And until next time, thanks for listening.